now entering
the Horror Sanctum.
Hello and welcome back to the Horror Sanctum podcast. I'm Jay with John and Kellen. And we were lucky enough, I guess a month ago now, we got a screener for one of the most anticipated horror films of the year so far. Late Night with the Devil. You've probably seen this. It's been splattered everywhere. But we did get the screener. And we'll give you a month to watch it because I think it's such a great film. And we want you to watch it. So we don't want to, we can't give you an episode without spoilers. We suck at that so bad. So a month later from the release, here we are. If you haven't watched it, go watch it. If you have watched it, come on in. If you're unfamiliar with it and just want to listen anyways, okay. So Late Night with the Devil starring David Dashmachin. In 1977, a live television broadcast goes horribly wrong, unleashing evil into the nation's living rooms.
Yeah, so Late Night with the Devil. I want to start by saying I did really enjoy this movie. I thought this was probably one of the better Shudder. I think this is a Shudder original, unless they bought it.
I think they bought it. I don't know for sure. TJ would know if he was here, but I think they bought it.
Okay. Yeah, this is one of the better Shudder originals that I've ever seen. This is, it really is kind of a, there's a lot of things going on in this film, and it plays on the idea of like what the audience sees as viewers, what we consume under content, what we believe, what we see, how we're skeptical, how we sometimes don't run away when it's time to run away. That's a big thing in the film. Sometimes we stay far too long, and because we think what we're seeing is just television, and perhaps television and real life start bleeding over. You know, just starting out. David Dashmachin.
Yeah, however you say it is right.
Yeah.
Dashmachin.
Just a really great actor. The first time I ever saw him was, I believe it was in The Dark Knight. He was one of the crazy Joker gang guys. And I mean, he's just a terrific actor. And in this role, he is so believable. He's sort of like if you took Jimmy Fallon, but Jimmy Fallon lost a lot in his life. It's like Jimmy Fallon on the worst day ever, and he plays that pathos so well. He's so well-spoken, and I just watching it, I thought, you know, this guy, if I didn't know this guy, I could believe he was a talk show host because he's so good at it. He kind of balances that that thing of, you know, being likable but also being a little bit of a carny salesman, but it's not like so far that you don't like him, but just that kind of good mix. He really plays that so well. They did a good job making it kind of look like the 70s, especially in the beginning when it's like the intro, they're going over the show, they're going over his life and the tragedy and his wife getting cancer. And it kind of sets up this tone of the film that, you know, something's going to happen, right? It's a slow burn film. The movie, it reminds me a lot of a Ty West movie. It's kind of like, not really Ty West now, but kind of like
Innkeepers.
Yes.
House of the Devils, is that the other one?
Yes.
Oh, I love both of those. But yeah, absolutely. Innkeepers was one of the things I was thinking about when I was watching this one.
Yeah, it's very slow burn. You know something's going to happen. You just don't know exactly when it's going to happen. But you know the shit's going to hit the fan. What's funny is the Carmichael character, the guy who's the skeptic, I don't know if you guys noticed this, but that is actually the guy from The Matrix who played Bane. If you remember the guy who Agent Smith gets into his body to come into the real world.
Oh
my God, it is.
He's older, wow. So you don't see it. But it's this, because I looked at his eyes and I was like, that looks familiar, but weird. I haven't seen that.
Yeah,
guy
he's
forever.
The one that he's how Agent Smith gets into reality.
Exactly. Wow. Yeah.
Mind blown, John.
Yeah, it's weird. And I didn't, it's one of those things where I think his voice and his aging, you wouldn't really see it. I just, something about him was familiar. You know, the audience, it's funny how they play on the audience the entire movie. The audience just, they see things and they keep, they, you know, they're gasping, but then they stay and they keep watching. And, you know, Jack Delroy, the main character, is just kind of guiding you through this thing. And they bring out this girl, Lily, and they're going to, like, you know, try to talk to this demonic side of her. And I thought that was interesting. You know, that was actually pretty creepy when they brought Lily out, and especially when she kind of shows her teeth and there's like these, you know, the way they did their make her makeup with her eyes, it gave a lot of like Exorcist type vibes. I think that the only thing of the film for me that kind of hurts it is the ending, just because I think the whole movie sets up for this sense of dread, right? You know, something is going to happen. You know, the shit's going to hit the fan. It's not going to be good for anybody. Even the side character that's supposed to be like Higgins from Late Night, you know, he starts going through these things. He's hallucinating under the trance, thinking that all these things are happening. I just think that the ending, I don't know, it kind of goes a little bit VHS-y to me. Like when Lily, spoilers, the very end, shit does hit the fan. And Lily, you know, goes crazy. Her head splits open. Light starts shooting out of her head. That point on to me is kind of where I was lost, just because I just felt that took it out for me. And I know it's hard to end a film like this. It's hard to wrap it up nicely. But I just didn't like that choice. I feel like they could have done something a little creepier that wasn't so like insane. Because like the minute I saw that, it felt like a VHS segment, right? It was like something off of, like, I don't know, something about that just didn't work for me. And I didn't like that, you know, at the end they play with this idea that to get the ratings, he like sold himself, and now at the end he kind of comes out of this trance and he's holding this weapon and he's killed this girl and he thinks he was someone else. And I didn't like that part of it. And the thing is, like, you know, I'm totally armchair quarterbacking this because I don't know how I would have ended it. I don't know what I would have done different. I just know that that's the only part of the movie that just didn't work for me. But that being said, I'm curious to get about what you guys think. Overall, I do think it's a really good movie. So,
spoilers, considering I'm the most likely to absolute dump on a film, I loved this movie.
Before you dive in, can you tell the story of how long and what we had to go through for you to actually watch this? I
don't think. Okay. So we got sent a screener, and I think it came through TJ. And so the first screener that we got, I had some free time, so I tried to go ahead and jump in and watch it. And I went through three attempts, and they gave us a 20 max. I went through three attempts and could not get the video to play on my phone. So I was like, okay, I'm going to stop. I'll try my tablet when I get home, guys. Just a heads up, it's not really working. John tried to help with some troubleshooting. Everybody else attempted to watch it. They ended up having to send us two other links because we burned through the first ones, everyone trying to watch. Then Jay finally got to see it. I think there was a couple of views left. John sees it, and there's six left. I try to go in again, and it's down to one. And I didn't even click the screener thing. I go back in to try to pull it up, and it's gone again. So we have to re-request another series of screeners.
We made so much money burning those onto DVDs, though. You know?
TJ ends up finally watching it, and he's like, oh, there should be at least, you know, seven or eight left. That was one, and it didn't work again. Not on my tablet. So I was like, I guess I'm just going to be the one that doesn't get to see this movie. So about this point, we've gone through 60 attempts at screening this, and three of us had a chance to see it. So TJ reaches out, gets one more screener attempt, get the 20. I try to watch it again. It ends up cutting out. It says there's one left. I don't know where the other 19 went, but I was like, okay. So I got on my work laptop. Sorry, LifePoint. My laptop, and finally pulled it up, and I watched it.
Desperate times, man.
It was the only way that it would work. Like I tried my tablet. I tried different browsers. I tried seeing if I could add on. I don't know what the issue was, but I did finally get to see it. And like I said, I absolutely adore this film. The style is fantastic. They did such a great job, like John said, of making this feel like this happened in the 70s. The outfits, the shooting style, this falls into that found footage genre, because that's what this is. It's kind of almost like a documentary, and then it goes into the found or the footage of the last episode of Night Owls with Jack Delroy, played by the brilliant David Dushmalchian. And John said it again, and I know Jay will say it too. He's such a fantastic actor. The fact that he doesn't get more roles than he does is a crime, because he's everything I've seen him in. He's amazing. He does such a good job playing a variety of characters. So I would love to see him get more recognition, get some bigger roles, kind of like Cillian Murphy with you can't even call it his breakout role, but it's kind of like his homecoming role with Oppenheimer. You know, he had been in Peaky Blinders, had some recognition there. People knew he was a good actor, but then this finally kind of puts him in that A tier category of actors. So it would be nice to see him get some recognition like that, get some bigger roles. But he's fantastic in this. Like I'm just going to keep repeating. John said, he makes you believe he's a late night talk show host. He plays this character so well. And the desperation of almost feels like he's desperate to hold on to this because he's lost everything else. You know, his wife dying of cancer, he's kind of adrift. He's not being able to beat Carson, you know, the king of late night. He's holding on to the hope that someday he'll finally be on top. You know, that desire that most people have is to just, you know, climb that mountain and stand on top of it, even just for a fleeting moment. And like John said, he goes through at the end where he's kind of sold his soul to the devil, quote unquote, to finally get those ratings that he's always wanted to finally be number one. I don't know if y'all remember the ratings wars of the 90s between Channel 4 and Channel 5, or NBC and CBS, where NBC was just crushing it with Frasier and Seinfeld and Friends. And it was just, that was like the Nielsen ratings in the paper were such a big thing. I remember with the TV Guide and everything and seeing who was number one for the ratings for the night, for Monday, for Tuesday. I was a kid and I was still fascinated by this. So his obsession with wanting to get the numbers in, to get the audience to finally pull. And then it's what drags him through this horrible show, you know, where it's like John said, you should run away, but he can't because his producer's telling him, this is it. This is the one. Our numbers are through the roof, and it keeps pulling him back in. It keeps pulling Jack into the role of late night talk show host because he's on the cusp of what he's the only thing he has left. And that's this show becoming the number one show of late night, at least for a fleeting moment. And then everything goes to shit. I mean, and it keeps getting worse. Like I said, the soundtrack, the film work, everything in this movie is so well done. I get what John's saying. The ending is kind of almost jumps the shark. I won't say that it fully does, but it almost jumps the shark. I think if they would have gone a little more Exorcist with the girl instead of having like her head kind of split open, and I think if they would have gone more of her, you know, floating almost like a crucifix and, you know, killing the people and her face going back to that kind of marred and broken look when she was being possessed the first time, I think that would have been better. I thought the trippy sequence for Jack before he comes back to reality and he's holding the girl with the dagger, I think that was fine for me. I think it was kind of an interesting way to tell everything that happened before that, you know, because I do believe that it's something that, you know, he lost his wife because he sold his soul to the devil. And this is the devil's way of, you know, claiming, you know, like, yo, you want to be number one in the ratings? We can get you there, but it's going to destroy you. You'll get what you want, but I'll get what I want. So I kind of enjoyed the fact that that was kind of almost like a an homage to those psychedelic films of the 60s and 70s a little bit, where, you know, it's just quick scenes and everything's over the top and it almost feels like a fever dream. But everything in this movie, just for me, it just worked so well because it was so well acted. It was so well done. The skeptic being such an over the top douchebag, you know, that's what you want. You don't want him to be timid. You want him to be in your face so that when he finally gets his comeuppance in the end, you know, that was a little goofy when he pulls the check out, like he's going to hand it to the girl that's, you know, possessed and obviously killing everybody in the room. Like, I'm not going to be like, oh, here's your check. Just let me be. Like, that would be the last thing on my mind. The thing in the forefront of my mind would be like, I've just shit my pants. That's how they're going to find my body, because I've just crapped my jeans. I've turned my blue jeans brown. But, you know, other than, you know, just a couple of little things, it was just such a good watch. I can see why it's got the kind of buzz that it's got. I think it's got a 7.5 on IMDb. It was just so good. It's one of the few movies in recent memory. I think When Evil Lurks was another one that just kind of pulls you in from the beginning. And that's, you know, a credit to the acting and the director, that, you know, once this movie starts, you're kind of in for the ride. And anytime a movie can do that within the first 5 or 10 minutes, can kind of pull you into their world and kind of have you fully engulfed. Like I said, it feels like this is just, they did just find video footage of, you know, number two rated late night talk show host. So yeah, I absolutely love this movie, and it'll be one that I'll own and proudly put on my shelf when it comes out. So
bravo, bravo. Right beside Suitable Flesh. So I know the answer from Kellen. John, have you seen Ghostwatch?
Oh, the old
92 BBC.
I've heard about it. I haven't watched it.
I have been searching for that for a while, and I finally found it at Orbit DVD in Asheville last year. So it's basically kind of the same thing. So Ghostwatch premiered on BBC, and they treat it like it was a real news story, and they were trying to find this poltergeist, and then shit hits the fan, just like in this film. It's very similar. It's on Shudder right now, and I think they put it on just because this movie's coming out this as well. But definitely worth a watch. It's a little bit different, but when you watch it, you'll be like, okay, they 100% are fans of this film. David, what else can we say? He is amazing. And I see you looking at my story all the time, David. You need to come on this fucking podcast. But he's our screen king right now, I would say. Like, he's the king of horror, film-wise. He's got the comic book, the Count Crowley comic books. Like, he's just there. And he's so relatable, you know, because he's just a normal-looking guy. If you put him in anything, I'll watch it, plain and simple. So, I like the slow burn. Slow burns are 50-50. The only reason I would have watched this again immediately had I been able to, but I'm pretty sure in my attempts to watch it, I took probably 15 of those views because I would start on my iPad and it would get so far in and then it would freeze. And I would wait and wait, and then I would refresh. So every time I refresh, it was taking another view. I switched to my phone. I'm not going to tell you where I watched it, but I ended up watching it. And like you guys, I absolutely loved it. But this is one of those movies I loved before I saw it. And I know we all have movies like that. John, I think you were probably that way with Roadhouse. Am I right? You know,
I was ready for it.
You just have those things that you're excited for. And this is 100% on the tomato meter. And I get it.
And Love Lies Bleeding. I don't know why I'm so hyped for that movie.
It looks cool. Yeah. Looks interesting.
We know why. But
I've been listening to the music. I've been listening to the song from the trailer all week.
Oh, okay.
You're just staring at the camera like that after saying that's very strange for some reason. It's very creepy. They can't see you.
Small town boy. That's the name of the song. Because you went at Bronson Beats.
But slow burn movies, like Ty West is a great example. Mm-hmm. I love The Innkeepers, but nothing happens in that damn movie. Nothing happens until like the last 10 minutes. This is the same way. So it's like the last 20 is when it really kicks up. And I agree with the jump in the shark. It does almost feel that way, but I don't think they quite got that far. But I loved it. I loved the concept. I'm a found footage guy anyways, which is what we would file this under. I know that genre gets a lot of hate. It's hard to do right, honestly, I think. I'm actually talking to the guy, Horror in the High Desert. Nice. Anybody else seen those? So that's awesome. That was one I've never really had the desire. And I found it on the list one time when I was searching found footage. I went through like a found footage phase and okay, I'll check it out. And it was very good. And then they made a sequel. Very good. He's currently making the third right now. So hopefully we'll see him in the future on here with us. But
nice.
I'm a big found footage guy. I think found footage, you either give it a 4 higher or a 2 or lower. Like there's no middle ground, it seems, a lot of time. I guess some of the VHS is good, but those are anthologies, which I would treat a little bit differently. But anyways, everything about this film worked. The style, the cinematography, the acting, the way they shot it, the cutscenes, the fever dream stuff. It was all perfect. They filmed it perfectly. This is the one, and didn't it have like 15 production companies in the opening? It's like a minute and a half of production companies, which is sad. That's how much trouble they had to go through just to get funding to get this made. They had to keep going through these production companies. Like, and then we're sitting there as the audience like, okay, there's another one. This must be the last one. No, 10 more. Okay. But thank you to all those companies who chipped in and whatever else you contributed to the film, because we loved it. And we appreciate you doing that. So I do wish David would get more work too. I think he's done a lot more than we think of, like smaller roles.
A lead. He's kind of like an accessory character in a lot.
Yeah, like he was Polka Dot Man in the last Suicide Squad movie, and he was fantastic as Polka Dot Man.
He's worked with some huge directors, though.
Like, yeah, if you look at his resume, it's insane.
It says he's in Oppenheimer as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I think he was already teetering on like skyrocketing, but I think after this film comes out, it's gonna tip him over. And I think we'll see a lot more of them. It's also, we talked about like Let Me In and how this much hype on a film can be a bad thing. Like everybody was like, you've got to see Let Me In. It's the best horror movie. It's awful. We all hated it, right? Well, hate is a strong word, but none of us are dying to watch it again. So it didn't play in that one's favor. This one is one where all I've heard about this for the last year, you know, I've heard about this movie for the last year now. Keep seeing posts, you keep seeing posters, you keep getting excited. The hype was real. You heard it from us here. The hype is very real. Like I said, I think by the time this episode comes out, it is streaming on Shudder. So please, please, please go watch that movie and let us know what you think. So if anybody doesn't have anything else, we'll get around to our ratings and then we'll close up shop. TJ texts me his rating for this one. By the way, he'll be editing himself in somehow after this point, probably after the Keep It Spooky part. He has had some things on his schedule that haven't worked out. So stay tuned for him. He did give it a 4.5, which I agree with. I also gave it a 4.5. So, John, let's go with you.
My initial rating when I watched it, the ending really kind of pissed me off because I liked the movie so much. Like, I was so invested halfway through. I was like, holy shit, this is like a really, really good film, not just a horror film. And the ending really made me mad. So initially I gave it a 3 out of 5, but like I thought about it and I was like, I don't want to be that harsh. The ending I think is still problematic. So realistically, I would give it like a 3.5 out of 5. But that being said, I'm very tough on ratings, and 3.5 out of 5 is like really good for me. So
it really is. Listen to enough, it really is.
And I don't. I
agree with you about the ending. It did feel different, and it did feel like it went to a VHS anthology film all of a sudden. But again, like you said, what would we have done differently? Like, I have no idea. I'd have to really, really think hard about that.
Yeah, it's solid. I recommend it for anyone.
Kellen?
Yeah, and real quick, I absolutely want this poster on my wall. It's so beautiful.
All the posters are beautiful. Also, spoiler alert, the one you have behind you, I got a coupon from Sticker Mule, one poster for like $9, 11x17. So I put that poster on it. And technically, they shouldn't have allowed that because that's copyright infringement, but it should be coming soon. So I'm excited about that. So if you get on Sticker Mule, make yourself a poster if you can't find one.
Noted. I mean, I like I said, I adored this movie. I can't wait to actually sit down and watch it at home once it comes out on Shudder or Blu-ray, whatever way I can get a hold of it. So I will say it's probably going to sound a little lower, but me and John have talked about this before, and we're very stringent kind of with our ratings. So when I say a four is that's a 8 out of 10. It's an 80% movie. That's a 4 is high for me. And like I said, I really, really enjoyed this movie, and I never say this on the show, but I literally can't wait to watch it again.
I didn't catch what ranking you gave it.
I said a 4.
Oh, you said a 4. Okay, I completely missed that.
And then I explained why a 4 was good. Where are you at?
So that gives us a 4.1. We'll call it a 4. And yeah, I get what you're saying. Like, we all have our rankings based on different aspects of what's important to us. Like, mine is, this is a movie I wanted to show everybody, which I've mentioned many times before in the past. Like, if it's a movie that I want to share as soon as I watch it, you know, it's going to be high up there for me. So. All right.
Yeah, and I think it's like a 4.5 is close to perfection. So, I think the ending is what pulls this down to a 4. Like John said, it just didn't quite hit as well as the other 95% of this movie did, but still solid film and definitely worth a watch.
We probably should have taken like half a point off because of how much trouble we all had fucking had trying to
damn it, Shudder.
That's going to be it for this episode. Be sure to subscribe to our YouTube channel and to wherever you're listening to this podcast. Follow us on Instagram, follow us on TikTok, join the Facebook group. Stay tuned for TJ sometime after this.
So, Late Night with the Devil. Man, this is a wild story how we were able to kind of get this. I don't even know how I ended up on some random PR film guys email list for the podcast, I guess, who just happened to be representing Late Night with the Devil before I think it even got picked up by Shudder. I do believe Shudder bought it after it was already produced, or they might even put in like the last little bit to get it made. As I think Jay had mentioned before, had a lot of production companies and entities coming together to get this made, which for low budget horrors, you know, not uncommon now to have that be the case. I mean, look at half the Blumhouse films have like 7-8 different production entities in association with Blumhouse just to get a film made. And I know this was probably lower budget than, I don't know the numbers exactly, but probably just a few million budget. But you know, they recreate the late 1970s excellently. You know, they keep it tight. It's mostly that late night set. I love, what is this dude's name? The dude from Scanners who makes dude's head blow up. Michael Ironside. Michael Ironside. I love his narration in the beginning of the film. I think his gravelly voice just brings a lot of gravitas to the backstory of how David Dashmalakian, however you say his last name, that's what I'm going with, how his character has come to this moment, trying to still be competitive in the late night race, even though Carson has long since exceeded him. And that kind of paralleled the actual late night wars of, you know, David Letterman and Carson, and then later Letterman and Leno. There's usually always a strong number one and somebody nipping at the heels of number two. That's maybe less the case now. But now you got Kimmel and Fallon, you know. I don't think it's as pronounced as it used to be in terms of that, who's really vying for the live audience. In the streaming, you know, internet age, where everybody watches things after the fact anyway, it's not as competitive, I don't feel like, these days. But back in the day, when there's only like 5-6 channels, very competitive for those late night eyeballs. So I enjoy that it picks an era and time and just magically makes this imaginary character and show just live pretty well in that era. David Dash Malakian is a wonderful character actor. This is the best film I've ever seen him in. This is probably his meatiest role that I've seen him in. He usually crops up as a little character actor bit role here or there, but he always, you know, he has that interesting face and mannerisms. I mean, he's one of the best character actors out there today. And this really gives him an opportunity to step into a lead role, and I hope he gets a lot more of them. I think he is this film. The film is pinned on his characterization of this character who's grieving the loss of his wife, and ultimately, spoiler alert, as has well been done by now, that becomes his undoing. And it's kind of like a Greek tragedy. It's a classic, or even a Shakespearean tragedy. It's this classic thing of the duality of, you know, selling your soul to be famous, or to, you know, win the late night ratings war. What are you going to do in sweeps week? Oh, well, we're going to have a devil themed thing, which is not uncommon, because that was in the era, you know, late 70s leading into the 80s of the Satanic Panic and all the things that came with that. The media, it was exploited a lot by news outlets, by talk show hosts, daytime talk show hosts. Not out of the realm of possibility for people in the late night scene to have done something like this, and maybe actually brought on a possessed person or people trying to debunk it. The cat who was in some of the Matrix movies, who plays the skeptic, the professional skeptic who's trying to debunk all of the magic trickery of the possessed girl and her handler. He is based on an actual dude who did that, the Amazing Randy, who was a touring magician and then at some point started exposing tricksters and magicians. And he exposed the DeFeo family of the Amityville horror fame, who lived in the house for like 28 days and then moved out, wrote a book, got a movie deal, all the things. He was one of those dudes that skeptically would come in and debunk a lot of these things in the paranormal world for real. And he did that for years. And he got to be on a lot of those late night talk show hosts. So that character is very much based on him and is an homage to that, which grounds it more in reality, because it's very much, you would have had that guy on in the late 70s, early 80s. And man, I love everything about this movie. The screener, for the record, worked for me. First time through, made it all the way through. Thanks again, Shudder. Thanks again, the PR people who were very patient with my multiple requests to be able to get all four of us to watch this film. I'm, for the record, probably going and watching it soon while it's in the theater, late night showing. Highly recommend, if it's still playing. I don't know if it'll still be playing when this releases. Likely not, but you need to watch it on Shudder. You need to buy the physical media like I'm going to when it comes out. Support this film. That people only get opportunities to make stuff like this if they get a lot of eyeballs on it, and a lot of eyeballs on it in that kind of first quarter when these things are showing. People get multiple picture deals off a lot of that stuff. So highly recommend you go out there, you support this film. It's one of the best. I mean, it's a subgenre. It's in the found footage genre. It's one of the best found footage films, I think, but it's the subgenre of the found footage film that actually attempts to do a live action presentation of something like on TV or radio. I can only think of a handful, like I believe the Last Broadcast, which some people errantly throw out as being like the first found footage film, even before Blair Witch, because it came out in 98. Actually, the first found footage film, I believe, is the McPherson Tapes, or McPherson Tape in 1989, which was later remade in 1997, 98, I think 98, as alien abduction, some incident in Lake County or something, I don't know. Apparently scared the pants off Jay when it came out, and he watched it on TV at his grandma's house. So there's that. But this more lives in that rare space, like Ghost Watch, the very famous, I think it came out in the early 90s, like 92, BBC program that kind of went out as a fake news report. Very similar to what Orson Welles did in the late 30s, I think 38, with his War of the Worlds radio broadcast. If you didn't catch that one little disclaimer at the beginning of his show saying, hey, this is a dramatization, they were in character for the whole radio broadcast. They presented this Ghost Watch TV show as being like a report of going through a house that has a ghost and doing it on a live over-the-air broadcast as a news special. And then it gets creepy all throughout. It's got little things, but then gets really freaky at the end. This definitely shares that DNA. Late Night with the Devil and Ghost Watch are like sister films, and I think they're the two best to do to pull off that concept. Would make a great double feature. I think Late Night with the Devil's a little bit better. It is a slow burn, though, as was mentioned. It's, you know, the last 15, 20 minutes is really what it's all about. I do think it starts to go a little too far, a little off the rails in that last 5 minutes, probably, where they try and take it up one extra level to where, oh, the devil's getting out into the airwaves and going to infect everybody. This was a very small story. It needed to stay kind of in the spirit of what it was starting out as. Like, this is affecting this one guy and his crew and this little girl and her handler. It's a small story. It's a small cast. Keep it that way. Don't try and go too big. So that's the only reason for me it's not a five, because I love this film. I will rewatch this film multiple times, even though it is a slow burn, because it's so well acted. It's so well structured. It gives you just enough to keep you wanting to watch. And you know it's not going to end well. You know, you get the sense of that all throughout, the sense of dread and desperation by David's character, that I need this to work. I don't have anything else in my life other than this show. And we're not going to stay on the air if we don't bring up our ratings. We got to bring up our ratings. This is a sweeps gimmick to make that happen, to keep this show, to keep the crew employed, to keep me sane, so I'm not just depressed at home thinking about my dead wife. It's very well paced. I would have pulled back about 10-15% towards the end and not totally tried to possess all of the world or whatever they were hinting at. I think it went a little too far, but it's not enough to totally derail it for me. It might be for some people, but I think the whole overall effect is still so good that's very forgivable. And I hope the Blu-ray has some good special features. The way this like late 70s set and time period was very well recreated, even in the lighting and wardrobe was great. It's just a great kind of fly on the wall idea of like, what would it be to be in this old studio in Chicago in the late 70s when somebody brings this demon possessed girl and then it all hits the fan, goes crazy. This is the best version of that I think you're ever going to get. And I love it. I give it 4 out of 5 and I highly recommend it. Run to go see this movie. This movie is, it might be the best horror film you see this year. I mean, it's early. It's definitely the best in the first quarter of this year. 100%. Highly recommend it. Go watch
it. Let me turn my script around, make sure I didn't miss anything. I don't know what our next episode is. We haven't recorded it yet, but come back next week. And yeah, sign off. I'm Jay with John and Kellen. And until next time,
keep it spooky.
Spooky.
Nice.
I almost did it myself the first time just to fuck with y'all. Until next time,
keep it spooky. Yeah, this was, you know, I would have been disappointed if I didn't get to see this, even though it was literally a nightmare trying to get that
screen. I was disappointed for you. I was worried.
I'm sure you were itching to just go, you know what? He hadn't watched it yet. I'm just going to go ahead and use that last watch for myself.
I gave a 4 stars to Willy's Wonderland. That was the last 4 stars I gave the movie.
Not on here. You didn't.
Son. Not on here. Right.
Did we give April Fool's Day a 3? Is that what we ended up with? A 3, yeah, 3 and a 4.
So. I think TJ was the only one that was below a 3.
Mm-hmm. That surprised me.
Willy's Wonderland, you gave that a 4?
I gave it a 4 because it was just so... The thing that got me in that movie was every time he would take a break every 10 minutes and play the pinball and drink, I just thought that was fucking hilarious. Like, that sold it for me.
He has no dialogue. That's...
You didn't like it? Did you like it?
No, I loved the movie. Yeah. I mean, I don't know that I'd give it a 4, but it was, yeah, Nicolas Cage made that film.
Like, for sure.
To have zero dialogue in a movie and still command that kind of screen presence, like, and anybody who's like, did you ever watch Community, John?
Yeah, back in the day.
The whole the Abed episode where he gets asked the question in his theater class or movie class, is Nicolas Cage a good actor?
Oh, yes. Yeah, I remember that.
Binder and the research. He's made some absolute terrible movies, and he has been a questionable. But when Nick Cage is on his A game.
Unstopped.
There is, I mean, he commands, I mean, just... And it's the spectrum of movies. Like, you go back to Leaving Las Vegas, to Raising Arizona. What was the one? City of Angels, Con Air, National Treasure, Willy's Wonderland. He's done. What was the vampire movie?
Vampire's Kiss.
No.
Oh, Renfield.
Renfield. Mm-hmm. He has played, I mean, all of my bitching about Robert De Niro always plays Robert De Niro. I don't think Nick Cage has ever played the same style of character twice. Now, Nick Cage has been Nick Cage to the extreme in some movies, but he has played such a variety of characters. Aside from the makeup and stuff, he's on par with Johnny Depp when Nick Cage is being at his best.
Ghost Rider, that movie is so much fun. Like that it first
is.
One.
Yeah.
The I second love it. One
the Vengeance is not great.
Oh, yeah.
The second one is a U-Ball movie.
Yeah. That's not good.
Blood Rain.
I don't know that I've ever been as disappointed in a sequel as I was with Ghost Rider 2. Like it just fell off a fucking cliff.
Yeah.
Like the piss and fire. Like, I don't care if he does that or not. That's awful. And Idris Elba was in it. Like, it's just mad.
Yeah, it was not good.
But yeah, I would put Nicolas Cage when Nicolas Cage is actually committed to a role. What was that? Adaptation? Was that the movie he was in back in the early 2000s? Another fantastic, just out of left field role, and he crushed it. Like, I don't get why Nick Cage gets so much hate. I know it's probably because he's made so many direct-to-DVD movies.
Well, he needed that money to pay off all his debts. But we didn't talk about AI during this episode.
Oh, yeah, AI.
Let's do a 3-minute clip.
Okay.
with this real quick. Can we do that? And then we can put it on TikTok.
What do you mean talk about AI? What do you exactly about want what, us to do?
So I sent this. I think you saw it. You comment on it. The people saying they're not going to watch the movie.
Yeah, right.
So we're giving our opinions on AI, not like the specific AI.
Well, we're going to talk
because I have no idea what part of the movie was AI. I'm guessing it's
We're just going to talk about the people that said they're not going to watch it now because of this.
Okay.
Okay, so 3 minutes, John. Can you keep it? Somebody keep a timer because I don't have my phone in front of me.
I got you.
Because that's TikTok's as high as we can go. So, all right, ready?
I'll put my hand up when we're at 2:45.
Okay. Cool.
Ready?
Yep.
All right. So, if you listen this week's episode, Late Night with the Devil, there was a part we left out that we wanted to talk about. So, the day we recorded this episode, someone posted on Facebook, said Late Night with the Devil directors explain using AI art in the film. And the person who posted this said, and then I just clicked the comments. There were only three at the time, but how bad is it? God damn it. Well, that's disappointing. And this person said, well, now I can't watch it. Thanks, morons. This drove me insane. People, AI art is still fucking art. If you're not selling your art because AI is taking over, be better at it. And you not watching a movie because even if it's the whole movie, you simply not watching a movie because it's AI is the equivalent of me not ever going to a grocery store because they sell onions and I hate onions. It makes no fucking sense. And we had this conversation earlier. I'm like, let's do this real quick, make a little video for TikTok and give our opinions on that. And I'm going to pass over to Kellen.
Yeah. And I made the comment in that chat. This is a low budget film. This doesn't have the budget for big special effects. This isn't Marvel. This isn't Disney. This is a small budget film. And if they can benefit from using AI to add to the feel, to add to the story so that they can use the funds for other things. Absolutely. I mean, AI is just generating something for you. And the big problem that I have with a lot of these artists that are bitching about AI being used is you're overvaluing your art to begin with. I'm sorry, Debbie, your painting of a tree in the middle of a meadow that took you 3 hours is not a $500 painting. I don't care if you're still trying to pay off your liberal arts degree from Nobody Gives a Shit University. AI is a beneficial tool. Now I understand if big companies start using it so that they can save money to not have to hire people, I get that complaint, but we're talking about a low budget film that used it as a way to enhance the movie they had already created to keep under budgetary constraints. And if somebody wants to create a logo and they don't want to spend the money to have somebody actually do it for them and AI makes one that they're happy with, by all means use that. John.
Listen up, you artsy fartsy motherfuckers. You need to, I'm just kidding.
Flagged for bullying.
No, it's a tool, like you've said. I mean, it is a tool. It's not the devil. It's just a tool. It's like anything else. If you think about when digital filmmaking started and everyone thought it was the end of the world, when CDs came out, it's technology. You have to use it responsibly. There is not an answer to this of no or yes. It's a matter of how you use it. So, do I think AI is a good thing? Yes. Do I think it can be a bad thing? Sure. But it's not one or the other, you know?
Yeah, it's not one or the other. I mean, get over yourselves, people. Get over yourselves. All right. New episode out now, Late Night with the Devil. Go check it out.
Perfect.
I didn't have a piece of paper in front of me, and I thought about that before we started recording, and I was going to write AI, and I didn't, so I just completely blinked, but...
It's interesting we all have the same opinion, though. Like, I'm surprised that out of the three of us, because, I mean, we all have kind of, like, similar ideologies about certain things, but then other things, like, we all kind
of... I thought TJ would be against AI, just because the way he feels about pirating.
Well, TJ can be against whatever he wants. Mr. 2.5.
Yeah.
Not here to defend himself.
I watched April Fool's Day and didn't shit on it, and TJ did. It's like, why are we trying?